Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Coming to town. Hush, Jimmy. Listen to the music. Welcome to LA Talk Radio. This is, of course, the writer's block because it is Thursday. I am your host, Jim Christina. I am in my little radio studio here in Star, Idaho, speaking, of course, with my co-host, the sharp and the wonderful, ever dynamic Bobby Jean Bell, locked up in her little house down there in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
But you know, radio is the best way to stay connected while we're all in isolation, right?
and you know, it's like the old saw. You know, I have a perfect face for radio.
Yeah,
yeah. Especially now, because I haven't showered in a week. No, that's a lie. But anyway,
I know.
Hey, look, I want to make a little bit of an announcement here before we go any further. It's a word for everyone that's on furlough or just plain staying home because of the coronavirus. You know, we appreciate your listening to our show, and we realize that you've got a lot of options. So thank you so much. We also hope that the whole crew of the writer's block, that things get back to normal fairly soon. We're all hurting. Again, thank you so much for listening to our show. It gives us a little bit of solace in this craziness we call the world today. So that's what I have for you. I'm locked in, as you are, Bobby, and I'm sure Henry, as you are.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know what? We just introduced Henry. So let's give Mr. Henry Park a welcome back to the writer's block for his monthly diatribe into the Western genre.
Well, thank you so much. I hope you can all hear me because I'm 6 feet away from the phone.
Like you said.
I'm sorry. My daughter sewed me a mask for when I go out, and it looks great. But I don't know how Roy Barcroft and Jack Ellum and all those guys could stand to rob trains. The mask keeps fogging my glasses.
Oh.
Of course, I don't think they wore masks during holdups, rather glasses during holdups.
Right? No, they didn't.
No. Anyway, everything in the world has been canceled. The Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival, the TCM Festival, all the series and movies that were in production have been shut down. But that doesn't mean there's nothing to see. There's quite a lot in the pipeline. The INSP network, which shows so many classic Westerns, has just released their second original Western. It's called The Warrant, and it's about a pair of former friends who are Union soldiers together. Now one is a lawman, and he has to go after his former comrade who's leading a criminal enterprise. And they've done something really fun in the casting. The hero is that pale-eyed, icy villain from Longmire and Yellowstone, Neil McDonough.
Oh, yes. Neil McDonough, yeah.
McDonough, is that how I say it?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And the villain is the usually heroic Casper Von Dien.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the sheriff's son, who's a federal marshal and his dad's superior, awkward, is Stephen R. McQueen, Steve McQueen's grandson.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And in the new roundup, and from having become a sort of half-assed monthly, I've gone back to becoming a weekly. I've got an interview with a writer-director of another brand-new Western, Michael Pfeiffer, whose new film is A Soldier's Revenge, which is coming out for Father's Day. Now, they changed the title because they want to make sure people got that it's an action picture, but the original title was Soldier's Heart, Does anyone know what that means? Because I had never heard of this before.
A soldier's heart. No.
That was what they called PTSD after the Civil War.
Oh, huh.
Goodness. Hmm.
And that's a lot of what it's about. It stars Neil Bledsoe and Rob Mays and has nice supporting performances by James Russo and Val Kilmer. And Mike Pfeiffer, who directed two previous Westerns, Soda Springs and Wyatt Earp's Revenge, has another Western in post-production, Shooting Star, and three more set to go. One would have rolled camera, I think, today, if not for the coronavirus situation.
Mm-hmm.
And you may remember that back in 2018, I told you about a very interesting film from Alex Cox, Tombstone Rashomon, which
yes.
took a cue from the Japanese classic and tells the story of the gunfight of the OK Corral repeatedly from the different points of view of Wyatt Earp, Ike Clanton, Sheriff Johnny Behan, Big Nose Kate, Doc Holliday, among others. That is finally being released, and I'll have details very soon about that.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. And for all of us that are sitting around wondering what to do with our time, there's some excellent options. TCM, as I said, has canceled this year's festival, but they're introducing their first TCM Film Festival Home Edition, April 16th through the 19th, just as originally planned. They'll be showing many of the films they featured at previous festivals, all with introductions, some by TCM hosts and others maybe by guests, interspersed with some of the great interviews conducted at the previous festivals, like Eva Marie Saint, Kim Novak, Faye Dunaway, Norman Lloyd, and Peter O'Toole. And the AFI has created the AFI Movie Club. Do you know about this?
No.
It's terrific. You need to write, I suggest folks write this down. You go to afi.com/movieclub/. And every day they'll feature a classic movie with an introduction and related shorts and interviews. They started 2 days ago with Steven Spielberg introducing The Wizard of Oz, followed by interviews with Lorna Luft and others. Now, you have to go to your own screening services to actually see the movies. And depending on what you have, you may have to pay. But like today, they showed Some Like It Hot, introduced by Helen Mirren and Taylor Hackford, accompanied by interviews with Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis. And that film's included on Amazon Prime. It's free at TCM Streaming. You can buy it through Criterion and YouTube. And you can see any of the programs you missed. So please check that out. And please check out the April True West with Jesse James on the cover, as usual. And read my article celebrating the 40th anniversary of The Long Riders. Mm-hmm. I got to talk with director Walter Hill, producers and stars James Keach and Stacey Keach, and Bobby Carradine, and the lovely Bell star, Pamela Reed. And you know what? You can read all about this and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thank you so much, Henry.
Thank you.
As always,
it's a wonderful show.
Hey, you do as well. And, you know, it's always just a pleasure having you with us. And so now enjoy the rest of your evening. Oh, incidentally, I wanted to let you know that the documentary that your daughter was involved in. I can't say it's a great show, but I can say that how well done was that?
Thank you so much.
A phenomenal, phenomenal piece of work. And I applaud her.
Thank you. Just for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, it's the Netflix documentary series, The Trials of Gabriel Fernandez. And my daughter Sabrina is one of the producers on it.
Yes, yes. And she,
Thank you so much.
That thing is like, it's heartbreaking. It truly is heartbreaking.
I remember
when all that went on and when all that happened. And oh, man, that little boy. Oh, I have one thing for you, Henry, real quick before you go.
Yes.
What is your take on the new season of Westworld? Be honest.
You know what? I don't have HBO, and the impression I got from the trailers was there wasn't anything Western anymore.
Nothing.
So I haven't made an effort to see it. How is it?
Nothing. It is nothing. I quit watching it.
Aw.
I know.
Well, too bad, but I don't have to buy HBO then.
No, you don't have to buy HBO. You can say, ciao to HBO.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Henry.
And ciao to you.
And hey,
thank you
whatever,
so much.
Whatever works.
Right.
Okay. Our guest tonight is a repeat. She's a repeat from March of 2018. I'm sure she likes being called the repeat because, of course, that's what she is. She grew up in rural Illinois and now lives in Spokane. Her third and newest book is a circus novel entitled, is it Hezada or Hezada?
Well, his Hazada is fine.
I miss you. Hazada, I miss you. She's also the author of a story of story collections, The Whole World at Once, which we read before. And that was the darkest thing I think I've ever read. And The Floating Order, Two Ravens Press. Her shorter fiction stuff is most recently appeared in Albedo One and Willow Springs. And you can learn more about her at www.erinpringle.com. But right now, let's welcome Erin Pringle back to the Writer's Block. Yes. Welcome back, Erin.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back.
There's you. Up.
You know, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you just fine.
Okay.
There's certain authors that come on the show and they're so dynamic and they're so much fun. And they're such good writers that we chomp at the bit to get them back. And when Jerry read me your email that you wanted to be, I said, oh, yeah, get her back. I love the book that we read before, all your short stories, albeit they gave me nightmares, but still.
Yeah, they're sad. Yeah, it's pretty
great
sad.
Book. And this one is no slouch. I mean, this one here is a complete story front to back. Suffice it to say, it's a wonderful, wonderful showing of mid-America dying, and everything that goes with it is dying. And it's kind of a sad book, but then it's kind of funny in ways, and it's kind of terrifying in other ways, and it's a little dark in places. And it's just like, wow. So Hazada, I miss you. Erin, can you tell us a little bit about the book?
Sure. Well, the title, I think, when you said how do I pronounce it, that has a good story. So I'll start there and then I'll describe the book a little bit. My best friend and former husband is a poet. And when I've been working on a circus novel for about 15 years. And I think it was about 10 years ago. 5 years ago, that he had seen in graffiti on a bathroom wall, Hazada, I miss you. And so he wrote it down on a scrap of paper and brought it to me. Uh-huh. And he said, I think you can probably do something with this. And I said, yes, that's my circus novel. So I don't really know how to pronounce it, you see, because it came from a bathroom wall.
Huh. There's lots of stuff that come off a bathroom wall.
Inspiration in everything, right? Keep your eyes open. Right. Eyes and ears open.
Right. My next novel would just be like, I love Haley forever.
Yeah.
We're like
calling Haley in a phone number, right?
After stuff you can't even put on Facebook. I mean, it's
right. So the novel is set in the present day, and so the circus has been traveling to this through the Midwest. It's a traveling circus that winters in Florida and then through the summer comes to the small towns of the Midwest, like traveling circuses used to do. And it's been coming every summer to this particular village for about a century. And the circus is not doing well anymore. So it's not a circus novel that's set in the sort of magnificent golden era of circuses, but the current decline of the circus. So they're down to one elephant. Everyone now knows of the abuses and is aware of how the animals were treated to make them do what they did. There's only a few acrobats. There's no marching band anymore. And so the novel takes place on the day that the circus is coming into the village. And the village is very much like the circus in that it too has passed its heyday. It was founded about a century ago at the turn of the century with the oil boom. And then ever since sort of the village appeared, it's been disappearing. And so like the circus, there's only a few stores that are still functioning. Most everything else is empty. there's only, you know, about a couple hundred people who live in the village anymore. And so it's about the relationship between the village, the people in the village, and the people in the circus, and how both groups are kind of stuck in the gravitational pull of the place where they live and where they have always been. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty of trying to leave that universe. And so we have Twin, the novel kind of follows a few people from the circus and a few people from the village. And two of our main characters are children who are twins, a twin brother and sister named Heza and Abe.
Right.
And they're pretty fantastic. They're interesting, I think, interesting people. And then Frank, who has been working at the circus for about 50 years, and he thinks he's going to retire this weekend. And so it's all set within the circus is coming to town, and everyone's excited about it, even though it's no longer what it once was. And
sure.
And through their anticipation of the circus coming, they're remembering what it once was and how wonderful it was. Whether or not it ever was is kind of unimportant, just that the nostalgia for the circus
sure.
reawakens feelings of better times, whether or not
sure.
the circus or the village was ever actually doing much better than it is now. The sort of illusion that memory will bring with it. And then the novel goes from there.
Sure. I got the impression that the circus arriving was, I mean, it was like decades they've been coming to this town at the same time
yeah.
every year. And yeah. they're, if I'm not mistaken, they are one of the last big top circuses
yeah.
around.
Yeah.
And everything is real shabby because it's old and it's not repaired. And it's just like it's on its last legs, much like the township is on its last legs.
Yes.
It's kind of like a comment on like modern times, I think, almost.
Yeah,
I swear that's as deep as I'm going to get tonight.
Well, I mean, that's good.
But the story is really good in that it takes you through a time, especially in the angst of this town going through its dying wags, and the circus going through its dying wags. And everybody trying to make more than it actually is going to happen. And it's really, it's kind of a neat thing to read. And your terminology and your words are so powerful. In fact, Bobby and I were talking about this before we came on the line, that your words are just like, wow, they really project the picture.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Bobby, it's your turn.
Okay, well, bye, Jim. It was nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you, Erin. You got 2 minutes before we go to commercial, so have at it.
Okay.
Oh, Erin, this is a wonderful book. It to me, it was all of what, of course, what you both have talked about. It did take me back to memories of the one and only time I went to see the circus when I was probably 6 or 7. And it was Ringling Brothers, and it was in New Haven and at the Coliseum there. And I'd right. never been to anything like it before. And it was scary and marvelous all at the same time. And then there were the midways. There were, you know, places
right.
when I see some of the way you described the circus also reminded me of the midway experience with maybe a small traveling, not really a circus, but, you know, they bring the rides and there's the sideshows mm-hmm. and things like that. And so that took me back to some memories that I had probably more in like my early teenage years. And there was always some magic. There was always some, the circus was kind of magical, but scary at the same time, you know? And I felt that as I read this, that we're all excited about it coming, but then there's the scariness about, you know, is she going to fall from that you know, that rope is, are they going to catch the trapeze, you know? And so, I don't know, I went through so many thoughts as I read this. Ultimately, what I felt was poetry. I was totally immersed in lyrical, poetic words that, just like Jim mentioned a minute ago, there were times when I felt a paragraph was so rich and dense that I had to almost read it more than one time. And then you have other pages where you go through the page really quick because each sentence is like four words long.
Right.
And then I felt like I was looking at storyboards for a movie or for a series. And other times I felt like I was looking at a major piece of artwork that just transfixed me, that I was looking at all kinds of details and trying to imagine, you know, what's going on in this scene or what's this character thinking about or whatever. So I have to say, as a reader, it was a wonderful experience.
It's a great book. A great book. And right now we have to break for a little bit, and we're just going to hear a little bit about LA Talk Radio. Hey, J. Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything on that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is .com, and they have it all, from music to sports to self-help, but they even have talk. So why don't you sit back in your favorite chair, put your feet up, tune into LATalkRadio.com, and give us a listen. Guaranteed to be fun for you, and we're coming at you right now. And I got to tell you that if you want to be and you want to have a radio show, you want to have it on LA Talk Radio, because they're just wonderful folks to work with. And they do such a great job of putting on. Right now, everybody is not in the studio. Everybody's at home. So everybody is running the show remotely. And it's still yet going out to thousands of people. And we're still on the air. So that's excellent, I think. My opinion, not necessarily that of the management. Okay. So it is now 7:24, and we are on the air, and we're talking to Aaron Pringle in Spokane, Washington. Of course, we have Bobby Jean Bell with me, and we're talking about the context and the depth of Aaron's writing in this one particular book, and which I just absolutely just loved. And there's not much that Aaron writes that I don't like, and of course I haven't found anything yet, but it's however you pronounce it, I Miss You. It's about circus in a small town. And let's finish up with the basic storyline, because I really want to get into your character development, because you have some phenomenal characters in this book.
Thank you. Well, let's just go into character development.
Well, we can do that.
You're ready?
Yeah. Bearing in mind that this show is geared towards new writers, so this is a great time to do that.
Okay. what do you want to know about character?
We're both writers. I develop characters all the time. But your character development is so good that there's not much else that you want to ask yourself about a character as the book goes on. And if there is something that you feel that you need to ask, it's explained maybe 5 or 6, 7, 10 pages down the line. So, you take care of all of that, which is really great. You never have to wonder.
I think I spend, so in terms of understanding the people in my stories, whether it's the novel or short stories, I spend a lot of time doing dialogue between two characters, so that I can hear how they talk to each other, what they are interested in talking about. And that may not and usually doesn't make its way into the story itself. But I usually love doing it. So I always think, oh, this is going to be the start of a story. This is great conversation that I am listening to, you know, as I'm writing it. But usually that's how I then later I realize, oh, no, I just I was just really interested by this character, and I was kind of interviewing them through the by imagining another character talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
Or like there's one. So I just do a lot of writing that never makes it in. And so when there's so much to cut from it, there, then what is left ends up being pretty, it has to work hard, right? Because I can't keep in every detail. So I try to cut what is the most vital, or leave what's most vital. And so it, what's left, it does a lot of work. Or there's a there's one small detail, like maybe it's a sentence or two, about as the cars, there's this part in the novel where the circus has come, and there's always a circus party that the village kids, like a high schooler, will throw.
Right.
And so it's this scene where all the village kids are driving out to that part of the country where they're going to have the party, and then the circus, they usually attend or hear about it, and then there's also the some of the adults who end up going out there. But anyway, so they're all, it's like a caravan of cars going out, and they pass either, it's either on the way to or from the party, where there's just a quick note about in the park, there's no one in the park except for this one guy who used to be in the park, where he would just be in the batter's cage, and he'd come back from the war, and he'd been there, and he would just go out and hit balls all evening, but he left, and now he lives in Florida. Like, he grew up there in this village, went to war, came back, just hit baseballs, and now he lives in Florida. But I wrote like 30 pages about that guy and his story, and that he had gone to like a junior community college, and he was going to be this baseball star, and he blew his knees out, and then he became a soldier, and you know, he ends up somewhere else, you know, he ends up in Afghanistan, and then, you know, some of the other of his childhood friends end up with their faces on posters on the street lamps coming down the street. But all that made it in the novel, and all I needed by the point that he might have appeared, was just that detail that he was no longer even in the town.
Right.
So I don't know that I have good advice about character development, because I feel like I do a lot of work for, what seems like maybe very little in the long run. Does that answer?
Yeah, that excellent answer. Another question I have for you is chapter length, because a lot of writers tend to want to gauge their chapters on a certain amount of pages. And some writers, like James Patterson, one chapter could be a half a page.
Mm-hmm.
I know the reasoning behind it, but what is your reasoning behind it? Because some of your chapters are long, some of your chapters are very short. I'm going to assume, and I, you know, what the word assume means, that you've told the story of that chapter, maybe it's in a page and a half, and maybe it's taken you 10 pages to tell that story. Is that where you are, or is there another reason behind the different lengths of your chapters?
I think it's all about pacing. It's kind of the rhythm of the novel. And what the language needs in order to work. So, toward the middle of the book, one of the characters, dies by suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the discovery of her by her, child. And at that point, every chapter, like the next 10 to 12 chapters, are all very short,
mm-hmm.
Where maybe there's a paragraph, maybe there's just one sentence. Mm-hmm. And it's both because the pacing needed to feel like that, but also my sister died by suicide about 10 years ago.
Oh.
And so writing this book was incredibly hard, and that part was the hardest part. And so I was trying to run away from it at the same time that I was writing it. And so that's where everything kind of, the pace picks up, and, but it needed to anyway, because everything's been set up to that point where the pace can suddenly move. So, I couldn't have started the book moving like that.
So you took the emotion of your sister and you put it into the story. And your emotion, you put it into your into this story as compared to an, another character.
Yeah.
So you use that emotion as part of the flow of the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. There's when she died. So she was 45, and she was 16 years older than me. But I, when she died, I, you know, as a storyteller and a reader, I rely on what I've read to help me understand the world in which I live and to understand myself and others. And when she died, I realized I had so very little literature that dealt with, suicide that I felt really, irritated. And, like I had Marsha Norman's Night Mother, that play that was written in like 1983 or five or six. And that felt very like what I was going through, but no other stories did.
Gotcha.
So I would get, the only stories were just not, were not useful. Like, horror stories where suicide is supposed to be scary, or I would think like, think of detective stories. So suddenly I would be imagining like, oh, you know, and not on purpose, like your mind follows the stories, you know, just because that's part of your narrative pattern of living.
Sure.
And so suddenly I would be thinking of my sister in terms of a detective story, like, oh, you know, because in detective stories, a lot of times there'll be a suicide. And the whole point is to then figure out who did it. So it's like a whodunit. And then we realize, oh, it wasn't a suicide. It was a murder. And everyone's like, oh, that's so shocking. And then what do you do? What do you do with that when it's your, when it's in real life and it is your sister? You know, so then you start thinking like, oh, maybe she didn't do it. And so then you start, you know, so then I would read the autopsy, and I was reading a bunch of like scholarly articles on suicide. But they would still, they would place themselves within a narrative pattern that was not useful and kind of made the sorrow even worse, because I would try to get out of that pattern. And then I would fall into like the board game Clue she and I used to play when I was a little girl, and I spend the night with her. And you know, the formula for Clue is when you think you know who did it, you open the envelope, or before you open the envelope, you say
you
it was
Mrs.
White.
Right.
Mrs. White in the conservatory
with the wrench,
with the candlestick, wrench, right? And so I found myself, you know, like, you know how thoughts will just come to you. It's not like you were, oh, I, how is this like the board game Clue? No, like I was in her backyard looking around and thinking like, Mrs. Reardon did it in the shed with the rope, you know? And then I was like, Jesus, Aaron. So like the things that were kind of coming at me from what society has provided us to understand ourselves, since there was very little literature that dealt much with the experience of someone dying in this way, and you're still there.
Right.
That's when I, you know, like I, so I had to write this book, because if I'd had this book when it had, you know, if I'd read it when I was 12 or 17 or 25 or 30, I would have had some ways to organize and think about and interpret what was happening in a way that was more real and helpful in the realness of it, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. And I caught you right there. We have to go to a real brief commercial, but I definitely want to stay on this subject for just a few more minutes when we come back. But right now, Bobby Jean Bell is sitting there on the other line right now, and she's got a company called Out West. And let's hear what she has to say about Out West.
Once upon a time, there was a man and wife. One day, the man said to his wife, April is National Poetry Month. How can we celebrate? And his wife said, Husband, there's nothing like a pinch of poetry or a great story to brighten the day. And the man said, We have lots of poet and author friends writing and reciting. And his wife said, Let's create an entertaining short daily post on Facebook. And the man said, What shall we call this daily post? And the voice said, Name it. Your daily pinch of poetry. And the wife said, Beginning April 1st, I will post on our Facebook pages, Out West Shop, The Writer's Block, and Rendezvous with a Writer. It's as good as done. Find out more about your daily pinch of poetry at 2 p.m. Mountain Time and shop for great merchandise at outwestshop.com. And the man, his wife, and their customers, fans, and friends live happily ever after, because it's always a great day out west.
And it is always a great day out west, except when you're locked into your house in Little Town Star, Idaho. I thank Jesus that I have my own studio here, because it's great. I mean, everything is just right here for me. We're talking to Aaron at Pringle, and of course Bobby Jean Bell. And if you want to call it, if the phones are working, I don't know if they are. If you want to call and talk and you want to take your chances with the phone, the number here is 818-602-4929. And again, that number is 818-602-4929. And it is now 7:37. And we are, of course, back in the studio now. And Aaron, I have to ask you a question but if you will indulge me for just a moment.
Sure, Jim.
You put your sister's suicide into this book, and I think a lot of writers use personal experience. They draw from that emotion of things that have happened to them in the past, and they put that emotion into their writing. And I strongly suspect that when you're reading something to a friend or something, and it's in one of those emotional areas, that you kind of get teary. But I think that when I've written some characters, I've written the emotion of killing somebody into that story, because I know that people don't, the emotion of killing somebody is very strong, and most people just don't walk away from it. And so it's like the suicide or killing someone, or the emotion of something very drastic happening to them or with them in their lifetime. And your thoughts, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, yeah, I don't know if it's the emotions that I'm putting in. It's kind of like the world showing how surreal reality is when tragic things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I do want to create emotion in the reader, or a kind of, memories in the reader from the book, right? Like the book's creating, like a world of memories that the reader would not have on his or her own.
Sure.
Such that they're changed in some way, so that they better understand other people, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
Emotions. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So we have talked about this before. And once again, we have asked you this question the last time you were on the show. You had a great answer then. I don't know if you remember what the answer was, but we are now going to ask you the question once again. Have you ever had writer's block? If you have, how did you get out of it? And if you didn't, how did you escape it?
Man, well, this is interesting, because I don't think that I have had writer's block. I've had, after my dad died, or after my best friend died, or after my sister died, there's that period of high mourning or deep mourning and grieving wherein I'm writing, but the writing is not consolidating into any form. So it's a lot of just words going pretty much nowhere. And I think that's the closest I've come to writer's block. And it's a hard time because I'm a writer, so I want words to find a form. And when they're not, that creates a kind of anxious situation. But usually I start to write myself out of it. So, you know, where things do start taking on shape about 4 to 5 months after a death. But no, there hasn't been a time where I wasn't writing or wishing I was writing. You know, that's happened where I was teaching and that part of my brain, my writing and my teaching brain do not share the same room. And so if I'm teaching, I can't write, and that's frustrating. But I just know that by the end of the, whatever it is I'm teaching, the end of the session or the quarter or the whatever it is, that I'll be writing again. So I just use that time for editing.
Okay. Okay.
What did I say last time?
That's a great answer. And Bobby Jean, I don't mean to usurp you. Are you still with us?
Oh, yeah. I'm here.
Bobby, I'm here. I like, go ahead.
No, you go.
I liked what you said about, I was thinking, oh, it would be wonderful if somebody reviewed my book and said it was both marvelous and scary in the way that you were describing the circus. And I thought, oh, those are two really wonderful words to put together.
Yeah. Well, and it is. And I have to say that all of the pages that follow the discovery of the suicide, you write it as so that we can experience it through all of the characters, the her children, her dad, her mom, people in the town. We get to be in their experience. You let us in, and those, you know, it's hard to read at the same time. You write with such love and compassion for your characters. It was just another piece to how you dealt with that very sensitive subject.
Thank you. I don't like mean people, and I've realized that
I don't either.
I know, right? But I don't even like writing about them. I don't.
Oh, I do.
Right, that's where we differ, right? It's like, villains or mean people or people who purposely cause problems for others. I really, it makes me kind of nauseous to write about them, and so I keep them out. And of my work. But sometimes I'll go on walks and I'll think, you know, maybe I should try to write about mean people. But I guess, Bobby Jean, I don't know that I would be as loving and compassionate if I had a mean person.
Some of the comments that you write, the people in town, it's that kind of thing that we hear snippets of if we're in a diner or we're in line somewhere in a small
exactly.
community.
That's exactly.
And they'll say, well, wasn't she, you know, and it wasn't even necessarily catty dialogue that you were recreating, but it's sort of like they were on topic and then they got off topic really fast. Their tangents, you just capture it. And so some of those people maybe were a little mean spirited, but you didn't dwell on them. And you just gave us a snapshot, again, creating memories where you go, oh, I've been at a funeral, or I've been at a wake, or I've been in a grocery store. Oh, that feels really familiar, you know?
Well, everybody's been to one of those small town cafes, and that's a great simile, Bobby Jean, that you can sit there and listen to all the conversation that's going on. Mm-hmm. And almost all of them are bitching about their town fathers or what the mayor has done or what the police chief is up to. And it's like, wow. You know,
yeah,
what a microcosm of people.
Yeah, Yeah, because they also switch topics really fast. Like, and that is the reality.
Exactly.
That is the reality. One thought they have suddenly leads them to a thought about themselves. It's like they have a concern for the kids or whatever. Right. And the next thing is they're back to something about themselves, you know?
Right. Right. Well, it's much like this program. Incidentally, I have to leave you girls for right now. And I would like to give you a few words about Creative Edge publicity. Ronan, if you would.
Okay, you've written a book. Now what are you going to do? Well, why don't you give Creative Edge publicity a try? You see, when Creative Edge publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. Like an old pair of shoes or an old friend, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and they work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. So Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson Publicists, and you can find them at www.creative-edge.services.
And if you're looking for a publicist, you cannot do worse than Mickey, or cannot do better than Mickey Mickelson. I know. Mickey, forgive me.
No, it's fine. Mickey, go to Mickey.
And Aaron, if you're looking for a publicist, get a hold of Mickey.
Yeah.
He will keep you busy. I guess he's my publicist and I'm pretty busy. So at any rate, I picking your brain is become something that's really fun for us, because your brain is like, it's like this big apple tree, and it's like, which apple do you pick? Because they're all good.
And of course I
adore your writing, and I just think you're the most marvelous guest. And I do hope that you can come back and see us again.
Yeah, I'll have to write another book.
Well, not necessarily. Write an anthology. But right now, if you wouldn't mind give our listeners where they can contact you. I've got your website up on screen, which is aaronpringle.com. Well, great mm-hmm. photograph in the front. Oh, my gosh. It's just like this. Wow.
Oh, dude, that's my intersection that I grew up walking to.
Yeah.
What do I think? Picture. What a great picture.
Thank you. Yeah. It used to be a yield sign, and it only last year or 2 years ago, it became a stop sign. But beyond that is the stone quarry, where a number of my stories are set or referenced. Oh, so you can contact me from, like Jim said, Aaron Pringle. It's E-R-I-N, Pringle.com. And there's a contact link on there. Or you can email me at AaronTPringle@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook. And so I think it's like Facebook.com/AaronTPringle. And I'm on Twitter. And that's at What She Might. So, because the name of my website is What She Might Think.
Right.
Because
right.
for a very long time, I was worried about having decisive thoughts. So my Twitter handle is at What She Might. And then by Pigeon, Carrier Pigeon, and Tin Can. So, these are other optional ways to contact me.
Well, you know, you're up in Spokane and I'm down by Boise, but by golly, when all this stuff is lifted and we can actually travel without worrying about dying, I might jump in my car and make a trip up north, and you and I go to lunch.
Yeah, I think we should definitely. I would love to meet for coffee. And
oh, absolutely.
That would be great.
Absolutely. It would be wonderful. And I have to say, thank you so much for joining us. And I know you have other things that you can do on a Thursday night, but what's better than the writer's block? Really?
Yes. Thank you.
And we just enjoy having you. And please get a hold of Jerry. Book another time. Let's get you back this year.
Oh, okay. I will. Yeah.
Even if you don't have anything new, we'll just rehash old stuff because you're just a fun guest to have on.
Okay. Then we'll
Bobby
do
Jean,
it.
Are you with that?
Bobby Jean.
I'd like to read all of those backstories you write about the characters. I want that 30-page story about the guy that shows up for, you know, two lines in the book.
Right. Yeah. Those are my salvage yards.
Yeah, so but I bet there's an anthology waiting in there.
Oh.
Erin, we are out of time. Thank you so much again for joining us and keep in touch, please.
I will. Oh, can I say one last thing?
Of course.
Okay. So we're in pandemic times and you can't get to the bookstore, two really good places to get Hazada, I Miss You. One is at Book People in Austin, Texas, because I was there about a month ago, and there's a bunch of signed copies. So if you ordered Hazada, I Miss You from Book People in Austin, Texas, you'd get a signed copy.
Excellent.
Wonderful.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yes, that's it. That's good.
Okay.
Okay.
Take care, my friend, and let's keep in touch.
We will. Thank you, Jim. Goodbye, Bobby Jean.
Goodbye, Erin.
Take care. And Erin Pringle, what a great guest, huh?
Great book.
Oh, my gosh. And she's just so dynamic.
Yeah. You know, one of the lines, maybe they can run away with the circus after all, but night to night, but when it's leaving, come one, come all, and see the twins with hearts identically
reading
broken.
Reading from the book.
That's such a great line.
whole book is full of great lines.
Full of great lines.
Well, you know, next week we have, of course, the publishers of Tuscany Bay Books. So you don't have to read a book next week. Just come on and ask questions. Of course, it's Richard Polidelli and myself. We own Tuscany Bay Books, and we have actually published quite a few books to date. And we're looking to do a lot more, and it's been a lot of fun for us. I just wish it would pay the bills, but of course, we're publishers. We don't make any money. That's the way that things are. But next week, Richard and myself are at Tuscany Bay Books, and that's who's going to be on the writer's block, of course, with Bobby Jean Bell. And Bobby Jean, we're all going to be under the auspices of the umbrella. Everybody's going to be inside again next week.
Yep, all together, separate.
Oh my God! But I saw pictures that Jim brought home, a plethora of toilet paper.
Oh, yes. We haven't had to open that pack yet.
Oh, my God.
Fortunately. Since the day he got that, there still hasn't been any.
The man went above and beyond, I swear to God. I saw the groceries, and I looked back there, and there's a big stack of toilet. I thought, that's who got it all. Well, in this time, everybody's hunkered down. Read a book. Just read a book. Pick a book up and treat yourself to a story that you wouldn't have known otherwise.
Right.
And that's how things should go. And for right now, for Bobby Jean Bell, and of course, Russ Davison and myself, Jim Christina, and the Writer's Block, and Sam, and Ronan, we are out of here.